Is Flat by Thomas Friedman. We joined our classrooms together, Bangladesh and Camilla, Georgia. And then we looked at how we could keep this moving, because we had such a wonderful experience joining our two classrooms together and studying the flatness in the World Is Flat. So we moved into the next semester into looking at the Horizon Report, which was released by EDUCAUSE and the New Media Consortium, and we joined classrooms once again and studied that, and we invited other people to join us. And since then, of course, we've developed a network around the world of people who are interested in flattening their classroom. And it's become project-based, in terms of we have the Flat Classroom Project, we have the Horizon Project, which has since then merged to become the Net Generation Education Project. And we did a thing with Don Tapscott last semester. We also have the Digiteen Project, and we're launching a new project next month called Erasism. But it's not just the projects, it's actually evolved as sort of it's a pedagogical approach. And I think that's something that people perhaps don't realise at this stage, that it's not just two educators with the same passion getting together and saying, well, let's join our classrooms. That's a large part of it, but it's also sharing what we do using Web 2.0 tools and fostering this pedagogical approach to flattening the classroom walls. Thanks, Chris. Over to you.
Julie, thanks. It sounds like a World War One aeroplane's going around, doesn't it? Over to you. Over and out. Thanks, Julie. Vicky, so a bit more about exactly where FCP is. Is it okay to call it FCP?
Well, we've actually started calling it FCP a little bit, just because, everything we've done has been, I believe it's never the right decision to throw money at a problem to begin with. And so basically everything we've done has been funded with in-kind grants and people who are helping us with things and that sort of thing. So Flat Classroom Project is now run three times a year, and that particular project is for upper high school. And what happens there is we study the flatteners from Thomas Friedman's book. We also mash it up or cross it to create a grid where we put it with Dan Pink's book, A Whole New Mind, to create our video artifacts and that sort of thing. And so we have a very rich project. Each subgroup is actually only 4 to 5 students, so there's still somewhat of an intimate relationship there as we study those trends. Now, the great thing is that the students do have to do authentic research. So it's not like they can go copy from Wikipedia to write their wiki project. And so they have a wiki project piece, and then they have to create an authentic video, and every student does create a video there. We also have several other projects. One is called the Digiteen Project, which studies digital citizenship. That's a little bit lower. We have from 7th grade till about 10th grade that work on that internationally. And Digiteen and Flat Classroom are just now starting up. We again also have the Net Gen Ed Project, which we run March through June. And Don Tapscott worked with us this year on that. It was a very great experience for the students, and we typically only run that one once a year. And this year we have a new project called Erasism. It's about erasing racism, and the students at our Flat Classroom Conference in Doha, Qatar this year actually had a competition to invent the next Flat Classroom project that would be around a global social issue. And they we had a competition, they had to create videos, and you can go to our wiki, flatclassroomconference.ning.com, actually our Ning, and you can see the video. And we had a group of international voting that happened, so we opened it up, people all over the world voted, and that was our winning project. So we are in the process of working on that. Bernadine Porter, another Second Life guru, is working with us on that one. And so that's sort of an overview. We've got quite a few in the hopper to move things down to the elementary level. But again, one of our objectives has been all along to make sure that any school anywhere that has a motivated, engaged teacher, we like to call them a teacherpreneur, is able to participate in these projects, because it's very important that we truly have a diverse representation socioeconomically, geographically, culturally in all of our projects to truly represent the world. And so we appreciate, we've got several companies that have helped us provide the backbone for this, including Illuminate, and just really appreciate what's been able to happen without really much capital outlay there. So that's sort of an overview, and I'll grab a couple links to share so you can see the links for those.
Okay, Vicky, the links, any links you put on here, can you put them in the, drop them in the Google Doc later if they're not already there?
Okay, sure, I believe that most of those are already in the Google Doc, but we have quite a few resources in the Google Doc now, and are in the process. We will be kicking off a full website here, hopefully within the next 3 months.
Okay. Just a reminder for everybody, if you want to ask any questions anytime, don't wait till the end. Throw them in local chat. Have sort of back chat conversations going on while we're talking as well here. We can multitask. And it may be appropriate to pick up the questions during the session, or we might leave them to the end. So, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, throw your questions. Use local chat as well. Kim. Some of the successes and celebrations of the FCP. What would you like to share?
Well, I think a big part of what I've been doing with Julie and Vicky is just working on the sounding board aspect of the Flat Classroom project. So Julie and Vicky and the other Flat Classroom teachers actually do the entire project, and then I've been kind of coordinating the sounding boards, which is students giving feedback to those full projects. And what's been really cool about that is that for the last 2 years I've been working with elementary school, and our fourth and fifth graders have been able to watch and understand what the high school students have been doing at their level and offer feedback. So that's been really powerful for us, and I think that's really exciting that these ideas that are so big and, you know, cover the scope of technology, our elementary school kids have been able to kind of capture that and be part of that. And that's really exciting for us.
Vicky's mentioned in the local chat about you've been an amazing peer reviewer. Would you like to expand on that?
Sure, that's just the sounding board process that we do. So basically, as the students are completing their flat classroom projects in either Julie, Vicky, or one of the other teachers' classes, they actually go through a stage where they're asking for feedback from other peers around the world. And I've been kind of coordinating that process and also conducting it with students in my own schools. So I think I've done it for the last 3 years, correct me if I'm wrong. I did it with my students in Malaysia, and then the last 2 years here in Bangkok. And basically what we do is we look at their work and we give them peer feedback. And it's nice to see that Vicky is saying that the high school students really do listen to what our elementary school students say. And for them to understand that there are students around the world that have never met face to face, but they're producing these amazing projects is so exciting for them, and it just gets them really motivated to try more things like this. So that's kind of where the peer review piece comes in.
I'm curious how you actually do the peer review. Sorry. Kim, how do you actually do the peer review? What tools do you use?
Sorry, Chris, I was just going to interject there and say that this whole concept of peer review, I mean, it's in many schools it's sort of alien even within the same school building, but we're extending this now, of course, to include international focus on this, because, you know, we have global classrooms collaborating on a project, and now we also have global classrooms peer reviewing these global classrooms. So, you know, in one respect, it's fairly daunting and intimidating, but, you know, the way we've got it set up, and the fact that Kim is such a wonderful person to work with on this, and so organized, and fosters that review process, it's just so important to think that, you know, this is real world authentic authorship by the students. They're putting stuff on a wiki, and we go, yeah, put your stuff on a wiki, you know. But, you know, and it's all very well doing that, but unless you're actually getting some feedback, and to get international feedback and review is just an amazing thing for students to see that and to see, gee, someone from, you know, dot, 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 whatever the country is, actually looked at my work. And here's what they said about my work. And, oh, they said I needed to fix this bit up. You know, this is an amazing thing to see kids in your classroom look at that and realize that they're not working in isolation, you know. And we throw this word around, you know, flat classroom, flatten the classroom walls, whatever. But even though it's a bit of a cliche, you know, when you actually see it in action, it is very powerful. And it's something that we're, you know, we're really proud of our projects that we have this. Vicky, over to you.
Yes, I just wanted to say how important it is to understand this whole idea of multiple audiences. We have expert advisors who are anywhere from pre-service teachers to educators around the world that advise the students on the wikis. When the videos are done, we have a whole panel of judges, and we invite everyone in the audience today to sign up for being a judge. And so we'll have 50 to 60 judges on many of these projects to judge. But then you have the peer review piece. So you have people peer reviewing, and those come from elementary and middle school students. And so it's creating a rich learning experience for everyone involved, the students that are in the project, the expert advisors who may be pre-service teachers and are talking to their classes about how this method of teaching works. But and then you have educators who are thinking about doing it in their school, and they're able to observe and be a part of this. So it's so important to consider, as projects are created, to have multiple audiences of all age levels involved in this rich sort of symbiotic, mutually beneficial learning experience. And that's one thing that makes it so powerful, and that Kim has done such a great job in organizing a very diverse group of students and educators to give the feedback. And the interesting thing is, Kim, I think, may have some stories of how some teachers have said, you know, after we've learned about what's happening, it's really created some powerful discussions in our classrooms on how these trends are shaping things. And then the students say, hey, we can do this. We can make these videos. And it just kind of opens up their mind to what they can do in their future careers as students.
Kim, you want to expand on the stories?
Sure. I think also what's really interesting along the lines of everything that Julie and Vicky have already said is that doing these peer reviews, which usually for elementary has been very simple, but it can get more complicated. Basically, we structure a peer review wiki, and then we watch the videos, discuss them in teams, small groups, and then offer the feedback on the flat classroom wiki where the students are doing their work. And then what's been really exciting for us is that a lot of the teachers that are participating in the flat classroom are willing to Skype with us. So we've had conversations with Anne's class, who's actually sitting in here. I forget her second life name, but when our kids have been so excited to see how this has actually happened, they want to talk to those kids and find out, how does this work? How can you develop a project without ever seeing each other, without ever really talking to each other face to face? How can you actually put together this piece of multimedia? And so we've had the opportunity not just to look at their work, evaluate their work, and offer peer feedback, but then to speak personally with some of the students that participate as well, and just kind of find out the details of what it's like to collaborate in a basically entirely technological environment across time, distance, and cultural boundaries. And so for our elementary kids especially, that's been really exciting. And I think, yeah, we'll continue to do that, especially at the elementary and middle school level.
Okay, what's the lowest age group? What's the youngest children that have been involved?
Last year, the youngest we worked with was fourth grade, and they're about 9 years old. And actually, when we were working the last project I did, basically at the end of every peer review, we had three projects last year. So at the end of each one, I asked the kids what they liked, what they didn't like, what they'd like to change. And one of the things they said was they wanted to be in a mixed age level group. And so in the past, I had worked only with fifth graders, and they're about 10 years old, and then older than that. And so the final flat classroom project we worked on last year, I invited fourth graders as well. And their feedback, again, was that they'd like to bring in some younger students and kind of model for them how this process works and get their feedback as well. So I think this year we'll try to bring in some third graders who would be about 8 years old.
Okay. Vicky, you just mentioned in chat time, distance, and cultural boundaries. How about language? Was everything done in English?
Right now, most things are done in English. Now we have had some students. For example, we had a student last year from Austria who was having a difficulty with English and was more comfortable in German. And one of my students said, well, go ahead, I'll post in German. And my student did not speak German, but what he did know how to do was use Google Translate. And so he Google Translated it, and then he typed a response back in English and Google Translated it back. And then he put at the top, and this is good netiquette, I used Google Translate for this, so pardon the errors. You know, you can use it as long as you're not pretending that you actually know that. And so what happened was that particular student started using Google Translate himself and was suddenly engaged in things. So, for example, we had the same thing happen at the Flat Classroom Conference last year. We had one student who spoke primarily Arabic and really could not understand much English. And so the group, every student had laptops, the group started communicating with him through Google Translate, and he actually had some significant ideas to share with the group. And so what they did was they wanted him to be part of the final presentation, so they actually wrote a couple lines about his part in English and sat there and taught him English until he was able to contribute. Now, one presentation that wasn't recorded, he actually presented in Arabic, and we had a translator, and that's allowed as well. So, you know, these things about language, and culture, all these different boundaries that Kim was talking about, you have to really enable and empower students to get around those boundaries using the technology tools as they see fit. And this is by providing access to the tools and encouraging an environment of innovation where they're willing to push past it. And as long as you communicate and you're upfront saying that you're using a translator tool, you know, the students are fine with it, and they're willing to sort of work through the problems because they know it's not a perfect translator. And, you know, some schools are opposed to using Google Translate at all, and I think that's really a shame because, you know, when you can have a conference and you can have a young man who speaks primarily Arabic and not much English at all, as we would say in the South, not a lick of English, and he contributes significantly, he presents, he shares, he really becomes a significant part of the conference, and everybody just thought he was great, and he's able to engage. You know, that's powerful, and that was really Google Translate and the students' willingness to innovate that did that. So, yes, it's primarily English, but anytime you have language involved and you have people who have English as a second language, you're going to have language issues and things to overcome. We've also had people who are allowed to post in their language by the teacher. So there are multiple languages, although primarily I'd say 85 to 90% of the communication is in English. And Julie may want to add to that as well.
Julie, do you want to come in on that?
Yeah, sure. I mean, just the language is an issue. I mean, we all know language is an issue, and I've moved into this new school in Beijing where I'm really facing some language difficulties with my students and some lack of understanding, and it's a whole new challenge for me once again this year. But, you know, I think, once again, use the tools that are there. They're not always perfect. Same as, you know, people still have hassles with Wikipedia in terms of factual information. But, you know, it's the tools are there. They're there, and they're as they are, and they facilitate what we need to do, which is essentially to get the message across. So even though it may not be perfect English or it may not be perfect whatever, you know, this is the beauty of Web 2.0, I believe, because we can use these tools. We can scaffold what we need to do with these tools, and it's great.
The online translation services really amazed me. The fact that you can go from a romanized language, you know, you can go from English two Japanese or one of two Chinese, you know, traditional or the simplified is just amazing. Just for interest for everybody, if you don't know about it already, in Second Life here, there's, and I'm not going to do it now, but there's a box I could just throw down on the floor in front of us, and you could just click on it and tell you what language you spoke. And there's, I think it's 36 different languages are in the box at the moment, and it will translate the local chat. So it'll translate it to any of those 36 languages, the one that you want to communicate in, and it does quite a good job. So that whole thing of the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy and the Babel Fish that you push in your ear and it translates everything for you, it's here, isn't it? It's coming. Hickey, can we come back to you? Can focus a bit on the teachers. I have a favourite question I ask myself all the time is, if I could do that again, what would I change? Sort of learning has happened from the teachers' experiences, and what have you modified as a result of feedback from them?
Well, every project we evolve from the previous projects, and every project we have a learning experience. We have something that didn't work quite as well, and you know, we often have growing pains. So, for example, last fall. Well, I'm sorry I said fall. We try not to use the terms of seasons because of the two hemispheres. last October, our groups were of seven or eight students, and that was really too large. And we've really struggled. We try to make everything research-based. So Robert Marzano's meta-research on cooperative groups reveals that pretty much 3 to 4 are the ideal size groups. And so... you know, we've struggled with that because what happens in our situation is that we're on such different holiday schedules and such different vacation schedules and sports schedules and all those things that we want to make sure that a good 3 to 4 students are interacting at a time. So we had groups of 7 or 8 to try to make that happen, and that was too large for our subgroups. So this year we've made the decision to set our target at 5. So that at any one time we could get to that ideal size of 3 or 4. So I think our struggle, you know, is that a lot of the research that's out there, which we base our work upon, does not really fit with exactly what we're doing because we are coming across these time zone boundaries and the cultural boundaries and language boundaries. You know, that's been a challenge. The other challenge is really having engaged teachers. We try to set expectations up front. This is not a project in a box. Julie and I are not going to take over your classrooms for 10 weeks and run this. You have to be engaged. You have to be part of this. And my friend Diane with Yes, I Can Science up in Canada has seen this as well. They actually blog with an astronaut on the space station, and she was talking and saying that they found that the best teachers for this are the ones that are engaged in blogging with their students, and that the worst teachers are the ones that just let their students go in there and they kind of sit back on their at their desk with their feet up. And I don't think that you're ever going to have effective global collaborative projects without a highly engaged teacher. And we do struggle, Anne's in the audience and she works with our projects, we do struggle with trying to empower as much synchronous as possible, but to really set the expectations that this is an asynchronous world and they have to learn to communicate asynchronously. You know, students, they want to look at each other and see each other. And I had some friends out in the Midwest, they were putting in a video conferencing center. And they said, well, we're putting on this video conferencing center because we really want to communicate with kids in Africa. We're studying Africa. And I said, okay, who's going to get up at midnight? And they were like, well, what? I said, well, have you thought about time zones? And they were like, oh, time zones. And here in North America, we're really surrounded by these big oceans that take up all of our time. They soak up the time that would put us synchronously with everybody else. So, you know, one thing the U.S. has to understand is it's not all about us. We have to have a global awareness, and sometimes we have to get up at 3 in the morning. We can't always expect things to center around us, and we have to understand that for U.S. students to be successful, they have to communicate asynchronously. And, you know, Julie may want to add just a little bit on this as well, because there's so many times that we sit down and we say, okay, what do we need to improve and what do we need to make better? And, you know, we're only as good as the teachers we have involved. And I truly believe Black Classroom Projects attract the best teachers in the world, like Kim and Ann that we have here with us, teachers that are willing to be teacherpreneurs and really be engaged. And that's where our innovation and the excitement comes from. It's kind of like going to some sort of viral meeting because, you know, where everybody's there through the through Twitter and through other places. There's just an energy level that is you don't find in other things. And I'll pass it over to Julie to continue with this question.
Yeah, sure, Vicky. I think the fact is now that our projects have now lasted through three time zones differences in terms of my professional experience, because we started when I was in Bangladesh and then I moved to Qatar and now I'm in China, and I'm exactly at the moment 12 hours ahead of you. I'm exactly on the opposite side of the world. So in terms of how you and I communicate, we've had to rethink when we're both online and how we can engage in real time and then what we need to do asynchronously. And this is typical of a project. You look at, well, I'm in a project, I've got Australia, I've got Spain, I've got UK or whatever, I've got USA. Who's going to be awake when I'm awake? Who isn't? How am I going to engage asynchronously? When will I have the opportunity to engage synchronously? And, you know, it's a challenge. And engage is the operative word. And this is a good segue into actually what we're doing in Hong Kong later this week, which is running this workshop that engages not only students, but teachers as well. And this is the first time we've actually had a chance to do this, to include educators in a workshop that runs through some of the objectives of a flat classroom project. And, you know, it does actually, you know, if you're a teacher who's looking for something and is out there sort of promoting best practice. I mean, this type of global collaboration and online project engagement is like a second life. There, I'm going to use the play on words there. It sort of gives you a second wind in your career to an extent, and it really pushes you. It completely propels you into 21st century learning, and which is, you know, we say, oh, this is where all teachers should be, but you know, it's not that easy for all teachers to get there, but certainly keep walking in that direction. Chris, over to you.
Okay, I'm going to ask you more about the event in Hong Kong, which is this coming Thursday. And before we do that, I'm just curious, how many people here will be in the Hong Kong conference? Can you just type your name into local chat if you're going to be participating in the Hong Kong conference? Raise his hand. Can't hear me. Wonder why. Wibble, if you can't hear me, play around with your active speakers box. So we've got a few here. Okay, most people can still hear okay, that's good. My heart can slow down now. Maybe we focus now, we've got 15 minutes left, maybe we focus a bit on the Hong Kong event. Vicky, you're not going to be there, but Julie and Kim, you're going to be organizing that. Maybe you could give us some more details about how it's going to take place as a strand, isn't it? Which of you would like to take that on? Kim.
Sure. Can you guys hear me? Because everyone else is totally breaking up for me. Okay, good. I'll keep talking. Basically, what we've been planning is a real project-based experience. So it's going to be 2.5 days, starting at 2 o'clock on the Thursday afternoon. And we'll go through till Saturday afternoon. And basically it's kind of two stages, and Julie, please interrupt me at any point if I get anything wrong or I'm missing anything. And the first part is really gonna be addressing the issue of the digital divide. How can we kind of solve this problem for the world? What can all of our teams of students and teachers, both face-to-face and virtual, develop to address the issue of the digital divide? And that'll be most of the first half day and then the full second day. And by the end of that second day, we will choose winners, for lack of a better word, and those groups will be able to give kind of like a TED Talk style presentation about what their solution is for this digital divide issue. And then on the final day, those groups will be making that TED Talk, and the other groups that were not the winners, and I know I'm the one who doesn't like the term winners, and I'm using it now, so I apologize for that, will be working on what their personal reaction is to the flat classroom workshop experience. What has it been like for them? What's been powerful about it? Why is it important? Why should we keep doing it? And all of those finished pieces of work will be shared on the final day of the conference. I think it's the actual very last session at 3 o'clock about that. Julie, can you fill in any gaps for me?
Sure. Thanks, Kim. That's a great overview. I think what is unique about this event is that we were asked to put together teachers and students in the one project-based learning experience. So this is the first time we've actually done this. So what we have about 40 people, just over 40 people now coming together, and they're high school students from Hong Kong, Korea, and Singapore, who are coming in person to the conference, and educators coming with them. And these are educators from the same schools as the students. And we've put them into teams. So we have teams of students and teams of educators. We haven't mixed the teams as such. But they're all working on the same objectives. They're coming to grips with Web 2.0 tools. They're coming to grips with what it means to identify issues and problems within the world. Our overall theme is the digital divide, which is a fairly broad theme, so it gives them lots of scope. They're going to brainstorm what they see as some solutions in terms of how can we unite classrooms, how can we inspire educators and education institutions to do something about the issues that are perceived as part of the digital divide. So they're going to put together presentations, and you know, the idea is that we interact with the real conference strand, the adult conference strand, and they provide feedback to us. But what another really exciting part of this event in Hong Kong is the fact that we've invited virtual participants to actually sign up as team members as well. So we have, say, a team of four students or four participants with us face-to-face in Hong Kong, but that team will also have two or so virtual members who are ostensibly full members of the team. And, you know, this is, once again, this is another way of flattening the walls of learning. So these virtual members if they can, in real time, be part of the back channel and watch the Ustream as we go through the sessions each day. If real time is fairly difficult, for example, if they're in the USA, which a number of them are, you know, we have the Wiki, we have the Ning, we have other mediums that they can connect with each other and provide resources. I mean, the objectives is, one of the objectives is that the best presentations on the digital divide will actually create a TED-type talk, which we're actually calling a FLAT, which is a Flat Learning Action Talk. We've decided to go with our own sort of brand rather than use the term TED. Flat Learning Action Talk. Those three teams will be requesting their virtual members to provide them with some outsourced multimedia. And this is exactly what we do in the Flat Classroom Project. We request people to provide the teams in the project with some outsourced material, some ideas, some pictures, some short video clips, some short opinions, etc. And they will be using those in their final presentation. So that's that strand. On the last day, there'll be a second strand as well, who will be putting together more of the presentation. We have a 30-minute slot right at the end of the conference where the workshop participants will be presenting and showcasing the work that they've done and showing how, you know, the methods and the methodology and pedagogy of flat classroom learning has impacted the results from their investigation and the outcomes. Vicky, do you want to add anything at this stage? Over to you.
It's just that this whole model of a project-based learning conference, it, you know, really, we had never seen it until we had done it at the conference in Qatar. And putting educators and students together is such a powerful thing. You know, when you go to NECC, you hear people saying, well, students do this, students do that, my students do this. But when you put the students together, and we had some TED Talks at our flat learning talks in Qatar, and had a laptop. And so we would have one really engaging speaker. For example, Jeff Utecht was one of our best speakers, and he did an amazing job, and the students are so engaged and they're listening. And then you get someone up who say is not so exciting, and I will not call names here. And the students are on Facebook, on their Facebook group, or they're on their Ning blogging, or they're doing other things. Then the educators go back to their group and they say, well, my goodness, those students were really tuned out, weren't they? And, you know, when you have it right there in front of you, and you see how the students learn in front of you, and you can see the engagement when you use project-based learning, when you can see how it works, it's kind of like a petri dish of learning, where you've created this rich learning environment, but you have the educators who are able to be part of it and see it happen, and they're able to witness and observe what we're talking about. And when they go back, they get it because they've experienced it. And if you look at all the educators who are using these tools effectively, they've all had that I see it moment, that second wind that Julie and then Anne and the audience, Aaron, when the audience were talking about. That, you know, I see it. It's exciting. It's wonderful. I've got to do this in my classroom. And so when that happens, that's when they're ready to change and make the difference. And so when you can create a rich project-based learning experience and an educational conference where students are involved on a level playing field with teachers, that is really the way that I think that we should look at our conferences moving.
It really is. I love it. Any questions about that? About a conference in Hong Kong? Anything in chat? I think. Maybe we can finish on one last point. If people wanted more information. Where about FCP? Where would they go?
Well, I'm actually handing out note cards with the basic information right now. I'm trying to find Aristotle. I'm not sure where he is. Maybe he's behind me. But most of the people in the audience have gotten a copy, and if they want to stay afterwards and they don't have a copy, then I'll be happy to give it to them. It includes some of the essential links, and I'll give you a copy as well. Shambles, so you can have that. But it's kind of got our schedule for this year and that sort of thing. And the link to where they need to go is in the note card, but it's flatclassroomproject.org, and there's actually a link off of that, new projects 0910, but it's in the it's in there, and I'll hand you one as well, so you can give it to those later and post it as part of the show notes. But our DigiTeen and Flat Classroom projects are really pretty full right now. We might have a little bit of room for some educators from Australia in the Flat Classroom and DigiTeen. We don't have quite as many as we'd like. But for now, for U.S., for this first particular session, our cycle, as we like to call it, we are full for U.S. schools. But other schools, feel free. You could still get in on these projects, and then you can go ahead and apply for next year. So it's just really an exciting thing, and the neatest thing is that a lot of teachers, after they participate, go on and create their own types of projects in other subjects, and that's really what we want to see is the birth of teacherpreneurs out of this sort of intense boot camp of learning that happens in flat classrooms.
Can I just add that we have this workshop in Hong Kong, and next February we're running another workshop in Mumbai in India, if anyone's interested. And you can find out all the information about that on our flatclassroomproject.org portal. But we're running as a strand of the ASB Unplugged conference, which I know a lot of international educators will have picked up somewhere about this particular conference run at the American School of Bombay. And we're really excited to be doing that one. And Vicky's coming out of the USA for that particular one as well. So that's another opportunity for educators to come and connect in real time, or perhaps even virtually, and be part of that learning experience as well at the end of next February. Thanks, Chris.
Great, thanks. Actually, my question was going to be about sustainability, because this is sort of project that could grow enormously, and everybody here has a day job as well as what we're doing here. It's good to remember that. How do you deal with that? How do you deal with the immense? This must create a lot of extra work for you guys. How are you going to deal with the sustainability of this project?
Well, what we've got right now is Illuminate. We've got several corporate companies that have supported us with in-kind type things, and Illuminate has just funded a 20-hour-a-week administrator for us, which is Kim Case, a National Board Certified Teacher out of Texas, and that has really taken us to the next level. We are working on some grants and that sort of thing to keep things going, but you know, the thing about it is that this is the first time in history that teachers could literally stay in the classroom but be part of a global type network with these projects. And so I know for me, and Julie has spoken to me about this as well, our goal for the short term is that we really want to stay in the classroom, because, you know, the thing about a lot of projects is that the people may have used to be in the classroom, and that is that's great and wonderful. There are a lot of great things out there, but we want to be able to stay abreast of the rapidly changing environment with students. And so by bringing on corporate partners who help us fund the activities behind the scenes, we're able to stay in the classroom, which is sort of our goal. And keep things going. But we do have quite a few companies that have supported us with in-kind type things. And, you know, we're on the final list for the WISE Award, which we're very excited about, for pluralism. And we'll see, we had to raise, Julie raised about $75,000 last year for our first Flat Classroom Conference. And we need to raise about that for this year's at ASB Unplugged, and are working on that as well. So it does take a lot of work, and at some point we will have to have a funded organization. But for now, I guess we're trying to stay as grassroots as possible. It is so important to truly understand and be a part of what's happening in the classroom, and we want to keep that that connection and be part of what's happening and not become too bureaucratic.
Well, that really warms my heart to hear that. You know, so many, we've all experienced, you know, if you're a good teacher, what happens to you? You get promoted out of the classroom, and it's brilliant from that point of view. Can I just mention to everybody, Illuminate, if you haven't heard of Illuminate before, Illuminate is some webinar software. And I know them because every Saturday night, Thailand time, so 11 o'clock Thailand time, midnight every Saturday, Hong Kong time, they have a webinar using Illuminate software, often about Web 2.0 tools. And that's a nice professional development opportunity. I put the URL. I think it's the correct URL, because I've done that from memory, which is dangerous for me. Try Illuminate. It's brilliant. You can get your free room, but a free webinar room yourself. But you can only have three people in it. Here endeth the advert for Illuminate. They got a bit of extra money there. We're on the top of the hour, guys. That the 60 minutes. It's gone. Any comments from the audience? Yes, from the audience. Maybe just go along. Any last input? Maybe I go Vicky, Julie, and then Kim. Vicky, any last comments? They're asleep.
Just that if you may participate in any way you see fit. You may be an expert advisor. We need people to interact with the students on the wikis. We need judges to be part of the judging process at the end. And we will be posting via our Twitter accounts and through, we have a Flat Classroom Twitter account, links to those applications. We do have college professors that will sign up for, say, 20 slots of judging, or so a lot of college professors are writing this sort of thing into their curriculum and involving pre-service teachers, which we love seeing that because that's kind of the way it needs to go. We have a whole viral network of college professors now that support this model of teaching. So please, if you would like to join in and see more, judging takes approximately 2 hours. And it doesn't have to be 2 hours at the same time. And that will be coming up in December. We'll need a set of judges, and we'll be recruiting around 50 judges then. And we also need expert advisors right now, and we're kind of looking probably around 22 advisors that we'll need for our wikis. So look for those applications, and we hope that some of you will consider sharing and being a part of that. I'll also drop in one other link to some work my students are doing in virtual worlds. It's their blog, the DigiTeen blog, which was born out of the DigiTeen project last year. And it has a lot of cool tutorials for those who want to work in virtual worlds.
Vicky, thanks. Julie, any last pearls to share?
Yes, Chris, yes. Sorry, I was just madly trying to write the word pedagogical, and I sort of missed it a bit there. Yeah, I mean, Flat Classroom, it's a pedagogical approach. It's more than just a project, and we welcome people to come and join us in whatever capacity they can. If they have a classroom that they can bring into the project, that's great. If they want to come in as an expert advisor or a mentor or a peer reviewer or whatever. I think nobody comes into our project and walks away disappointed, because we all learn from each other. I mean, every single project we run, I learn something. And I think Vicky would agree with me, and Kim as well. I mean, we're all on this amazing learning curve. The NetGen Ed project, we did our awards ceremony in Reaction Grid. It wasn't a complete success, but we all learned a lot from it. So, you know, we're cutting edge, and we're out there trying to do it. And please come and join us. Come and be part of what we're doing next week in Hong Kong virtually. We have, you know, as you know, we've got a back channel and a Ustream. Just come in and get your feet wet and be part of it. Thanks.
Thanks, Julie. I think that's important for us all to remember here. Every one of us here now, we're actually cutting edge. We're in this 3D virtual world, and we spread right across the world. And it's worked well tonight. I'm really pleased with how the technology has held up to it, and we've been able to focus on the content, not the technology. But it's important to remember that what every one of us are doing here now, this is very cutting edge. In 5 years it won't be, but it certainly is now. Kim, any last comment?
I can just second what Julie and Vicky have just said. Just join and participate in any way that you feel you can. Take a small step to move forward, because they are so willing to have people from all over the world participate and support them. I mean, I'm a perfect example. I don't even think that I knew either Julie or Vicky when I first started, and now, amazingly, I'm sitting here on the couch with both of them, which is kind of crazy. Join us and try it out. I'm sure it'll be a great experience for you.
That's brilliant. So thanks for everybody for attending. It's a nice turnout, and from all over the world, which it still blows my mind that we can collaborate at such a difference in such an intimate way. Thank you for the contributions, Vicky, Julie, Kim. That was brilliant. My only sadness is I didn't record it. We should have recorded the session. And again, thanks for everybody in the audience. And if you want to stay around now and chat, individually, I don't know what your if you have to run off to the pub if you're in the UK, or your Pad Thai guy if you're in Bangkok, but feel free to stay around, and thanks very much, and round of applause, everybody. Brilliant. And that's it. That brings us to the end. Isn't that brilliant? Off to bed and something like that. Yeah, I did take a pile of pictures, actually, which I'm really pleased about because I tend to forget sometimes. I took a pile of pictures and I'll put them all on Flickr, and so free for people to use. And I'll put a link to them in the Google Doc this evening.
Aristotle said that he has it in Audacity, so I don't know if you can talk to him, but he might can give you a copy of this, because I'd love to have a copy too.
Aristotle, can you do that? Can you send can you send me a copy? Let me put my email address in here. Yes.
Carol. Hi everyone. See you all soon.
Vicky, are you going to copy and paste that note card into the Google Doc?
I can. It's actually from our link from New Projects 0910.